سورة الفاتحة. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، ألف لام ميم، أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وآل محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
We had been discussing the subject of fitna and how Allah describes it in the Quran, and the reasons why we go through trials. And just a few words I will say today. The hadith that I mentioned, in which we see that Jibreel meets the Prophet and he tells them that there will be 10 times that I'll be coming back to earth after you. And the last point, the last reason of his visit, he will say that he's going to come in order to take the iman from the people, from the believers. He's going to take the iman from believers, meaning those who claim to be mu'mineen, he's going to take iman from them. And the reason he's going to take the iman away from believers is because iman is going to be so worthless to them that it's as if they have thrown it in the garbage. They have thrown it in the garbage. Now to them, it doesn't matter really who they pray behind or who they listen to. It doesn't matter to them who gets on the minbar, as long as someone is there. As long as someone is there and he speaks about Imam Hussein. Right? That's all that matters to them. But iman will be so low that iman will have no value, that any warm body that comes and represents Islam is fine with them. Because really, they don't care. The attitude will be, who cares? Who cares? You know, so in that regard, you see that even if Yazid came and gave a speech about Imam Hussein, they'll go and listen to him. You know, if Yazid came and gave a speech about Imam Hussein and made people cry, they will listen to him. So at least, you know. And afterwards, when they meet him, they'll say, excellent speech also. Right? They'll say that also. Why? Because the fact is that iman will be worthless to them. Iman will be worthless to them. To those whom, those people whose iman they cherish, then they will see that the person they stand with, the person they listen to, they will see him and then they will decide whether they want to listen to him or not. whether they want to listen to him or not, whether they want to go behind him or not, they will see first if his actions and if his deeds and if his lifestyle is what Imam Hussein and Ahlul Bayt wanted us to be, or that we see that his lifestyle, his attitude, his way of life is different. And when you look at it, you will see that this is the reason why the emphasis was on looking at the qualities of a person. Seeing what qualities does he have before we make it. Before we make a decision. Before we try to become friends. In friendship also, it is said that when you want to make a friend with someone, you test him 3 times before you start a friendship. Right? You test him 3 times before you start a friendship. Right? To make sure that he has iman, that he could be trusted. That he is not going to be disloyal to you. Make sure that when you bring him close to you, you see that in yourself, that you see it in him, that he is not going to be disloyal, that he is going to be honest, and that he is going to be good. So when Islam has so many conditions in making a friend, then how many more conditions does it have in making sure that you choose the right leader? How much more we have to look into it to make sure that we choose the right leader? And this is the reason why we see that when iman is important, you see, when iman is more important, when we cherish our iman, when we value our iman, then anything that is causing harm to the imam, we would oppose it and we would hate it. We would hate it. If you remember, some time ago, we were having a phone conference, and this is something, you know, that the youth organize, and this is like a national phone conference we have. And there was an issue that was raised. It said that, you know, why are we against, or why are, you see that some of the Shia so many against and are very involved in, and they are, you know, they hate the wrong system or any other system that they have. Meaning there's one Islam. Why can't we just, we work with others and we just be in this and, you know, and not be so emotional about it. Just be easy. Just take it easy. Right? I mean, that was the idea. Just take it easy. You know, we don't need to be that emotional and get all angry and upset at, you know, little things, you know. We just need to take it easy, you know. We need to just chill and, you know, not say anything out, you know, openly, this and that, you know. And if you look at other groups, right, and we have been with other groups, and, you know, they take it easy, you know. If something is done, they take it easy. Well, here the issue, right, is this. Really, I don't know about others, right? I don't know about others, you know, but, you know, I can just assume that everyone should have it. And I had mentioned this speech also that night, that one of the things that will be taken away would be the honor in men and the haya in women. But I assume that every woman has this honor, you know, that if he sees his daughter fooling around, or someone trying to fool around with his daughter, I'm sure that he will get upset at this. And a woman should get upset at this. Right? Why is he getting upset? Because his daughter means something to him. Right? His wife means something to him. That's why he's getting upset. That's why he's getting angry. If something is meaningless for you, you won't care. If that person goes out and, for example, he makes an advance at some other woman in, you know, club or something, you won't care. Because that woman in the club is meaningless for you. She has no meaning for you. But the thing is that if something has meaning for you, something has value for you, then you want to defend it. And if someone is trying to harm it, then you'll get upset at it. So for those who, for those people who is, for them Islam is meaningless and valueless, yes, they take it easy when Islam is being harmed. When the laws of Allah are being disrespected, they take it easy because it doesn't mean anything to them. If it was about their car and their house, you will see that they'll have a lawsuit. Right? With their own personal things, they'll go out and do these things. But when it comes to Islam, when it comes to Allah's Sharia and Allah's law, they don't care. That's why they're not emotional about it. That's why they don't get upset about it. If Islam meant anything to anyone, if Iman has value, then you would do what you can to defend Islam because it has value for you. And if you're not doing anything, then it means Iman has no value for you. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Ali Muhammad. You see, now we see that in Nahjul Balagha, Amir al-Mu'mineen had said,
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
He said that describing the last days of man before the reappearance of the Imam. Right, the reappearance of the Imam obviously is going to be a unique event unlike any other event in the past. It's going to be a unique event. And that hadith that Jibreel said that he's going to come back 10 times, on that, there's an 11th time he's coming back. And that 11th time he said that I'm going to come back when the heir of Hussein and the heir of Imam Hussein is going to reappear, and Jibreel is going to come back and be the first one to put his hands on the hands of Imam Zamana to give allegiance to him. So at that time, and you see that before that time is also going to be a time of very intense fitna, intense trials. And there Imam Ali says about mu'mineen, about Muslims, he says that at that time they will remain nothing of Islam except its name. There will be, in Islam there will remain nothing of Islam except its name. The name will remain finished. By only the name of Islam will remain. Now what does this mean? You see, when Jibreel said that he's going to take Iman from the people, it doesn't mean that they are going to switch to another religion. See, it doesn't mean that they're going to go to another religion and become something else. What it means is that, just like how Imam Ali is describing it now, that they will remain Muslims by name. They will have strong Muslims' name. But when you go and see them carefully, you will see that they have no Iman in their hearts, no Iman in their lives. No Iman in their lives. That's what will happen. You see, that's what will happen. And when you see that, when you look at our lives, the reason, my friends, that here, because of the fact that the influence of batil is intense. The influence of batil is intense. Because it has been mentioned in hadith that the trials are going to be great. In other words, the pull from the side of evil will be stronger than any other time. The pull that's there, the attraction that's there to the side of evil will be more than any other time. You see that. And hence, only, and you know that if the other side is going to pull harder, then in order for you to maintain a balance, you also have to pull harder. If you are going to pull the same way as your grandparents pulled, then you are going to lose the battle. See, when you look at your ancestors, they had trials also. Right? They had trials also, you know. They used to have bars also. Right? They used to have bars also. But the bars did have neon lights. You know? They used to have clubs also. They used to go somewhere, little hut or some little house somewhere, you know, in a red light district, you know, hiding from everyone, not to be noticed. You know? But now, you don't need to go anywhere. That red light district is in your home. You see, you don't need to do anything. You just need to change the channel. Tell you, the same thing that they used to spend money and hide and do all these things for, you see how easy it has become. How easy it has become to access the evils and access these things. So now the pull towards evil is stronger now. The pull towards evil is stronger. So now in order for you not to lose the battle, you cannot have the same pull as your grandparents had. You have to pull harder. You see, because we, in order to not lose this battle and win it, we are just pulling harder. And because we are pulling harder, Muslims think that we are extremists. Yes, we have to be extremists in order to survive an extreme situation. You have to be intense in order to survive an intense situation. That's the only way. If you're in your own pool and you swim there, you know with one stroke how far you go. Now you go to the ocean. Right? And you try to swim over there and you see it's different. Right? And now you see, you know, that, okay, you know, if you use the same strokes that you use in your swimming pool, you're going to be carried away. Right? You have to swim harder. So by swimming harder, you don't become an extreme person. You just become a smart person who knows that you have to do extreme things in order to survive an extreme situation. That's just being smart. That's just being intelligent. This is what we need to do. And hence when we look at it, we see that in order to save ourselves and protect ourselves from the extreme situation that we live in, we have to do things in order to protect ourselves that require us to have, for example, to do extra things, to do more than what we are required to do, not just the wajib, but to go more than that in order to protect our iman in the times we are living. And hence, this is not being extreme, this is being smart. And we need to understand that. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And you see that one of the things you will see that is in the hadith, both Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salam had mentioned this.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
That according to the trials, that the trials that we're going to face in the last stages that, you know, we are living in, and we see the signs of the last stages in many things that we see around us and around the world. And our ulama have written about it and have mentioned it many times. When we see that we are living these things, we see that in these stages, one of the things that will be more than any other time before, one of the things, and both the Messenger has said this and Imam Ali has mentioned this, about the last stages of time, and he has mentioned that one of the things that will increase in the last stages, and it will be a lot in abundance in the last stages, where mu'mineen are concerned, What one of the things that is going to be abundant that mu'mineen will have to deal with is called confusion. Confusion will be so much that for a mu'min, the hardest thing for him to do would be to know what is haq from batil. The most hardest thing for him to do. It was asked that or it's mentioned in the hadith that for a mu'min in the last stages it will be easier for him to walk on fire the whole day. It'll be easier for a mu'min to walk on fire the whole day than to save his iman from morning till night. Since he leaves his home and returns from his home, it will be so hard to save your iman that it's easier to walk on fire. You imagine how hard it is. Just to maintain your iman, you'll see how that happens. Right after we leave our home, we meet someone and that's it. You know? Or we listen to something wrong, or we say something wrong, or we see something wrong. How hard it is for us in these days to save our iman and our faith. And you see, one of the things that will happen is confusion. At least if we know what is the right thing, then even if we make a mistake, we know we're making a mistake. But if there's confusion, then we won't even know what right is and wrong. And hence we won't even be able to analyze ourselves also and judge that what we are doing is right and wrong. So hence confusion is such a trial that mu'mineen in the last stages, before the imam comes back, they're going to face him. And you see that happening all around you. And you know what? The reason that confusion will be so great is because that confusion is going to be caused by the ulama. You see, if an average person says something, you know, then you say, well, that's his opinion. Yeah, that's his opinion. But if an alim says something, then they say, well, Islam says this. Well, why? Because the alim is saying it. Right? The sheikh is saying it. It will be the ulama who are going to cause the confusion. You'll see one alim coming and say, you know, let's do this and let's do that. The other alim is saying, no, let's not do this, let's do this. One is saying it's that way, the other is saying it's this way, and you hear them from the same member. One week you hear this alim saying, we need to stand up. The other one is saying, no, it's best time to sleep. You know, and now we are looking at these, and people are wondering, oh, wait a minute, from the same member of the Prophet, we are hearing this, we are hearing that. We are hearing this, and we are hearing that. So what should we do? He said, you know what, all of these things, just ignore all these things, just do what you think is best. And that's what we are here right now. What are the people doing now? They hear so many contradicting and confusing things. So now instead of really looking into it, they say, you know what, just listen to it, we get reward, we get this sawab, and inshallah, let's earn that and get, if we go more into it, we'll be lost, just like they are. This is what's going to happen. And this is happening. And you see that the attitude of people now is that, let's not even get into this. Right? Let's not even get into this. And you see the examples are very clear. Right? Examples are very clear. And you see how things are happening on small issues. And because of the internet, now it has become more intense because now everyone has access to these issues. You know? I mean, just the fact that On Ashura, right, we should not speak about the Yazid of our time. We only speak about the dead Yazid. We should only speak about the dead Yazid. Right? And hence, you know, yes, only the dead Yazid, we speak about him. You know, so when we are sending lanat on Yazid, and Ali Yazid and Ibn Ziyad and Ali Ibn Ziyad and all these people, so we are sending on those dead people there. And the living ones we are not sending. And because we are not sending lanat on the living ones, we have grown to live under them and depend on them. Because we don't even know they're Yazid. Right? We don't even know that they're Yazid, and we are working for them. We are living off them. And we are happy with them. Right? Why? Because no one told us, well, this is Yazid. Because we are always sending lanat on dead people. And you know why we're doing that? Because it's easy to do it. It's easy to stand, it's easy to send lanat on a dead person.
That's right.
It's easy to curse him and swear at him. It's easy to do that because you know he's not going to talk back to you. I mean, many Shias are so proud that they have gone to the grave of Muawiyah and, you know, urinated there. And they say it with pride. You know, we went there and we urinated there, Muawiyah. Let's see if you do it when he was alive. Right? When he was a superpower. Right? When he was a superpower, when he would cut your neck, let's see, he urinated. They're like, with pride they say it. What's the use of that? I mean, Imam Hussein, all these years, 1200, how many years we have been mourning Imam Hussein? We are mourning Imam Hussein and all this energy that his mourning has given us. And it has raised us to this status that we can curse on dead people. Is that the power of Azadari?
No, more than that.
Is that the strength that you get from the mourning of Hussein? Right, that's it. You know, it's like, for example, someone has trained so much, you know. Well, now let's see your roar, you know, like Lion King, you know, wow, you know. And a squeak comes out. What? That's all that Azadari gave you all these years? That's all this morning gave you all these years? That's it? That's all you can do?
Wow.
So, one thing we know that the mourning of Imam Hussein is very powerful. Maybe you know that the mourning of Imam Hussein is very powerful. So there could be only two things wrong. Either we are so bad that we never learned anything, or that the azadari that we were doing was not the azadari of Imam Hussein.
That's right.
Because if it was the azadari of Imam Hussein, then it would give us more strength than just to curse at dead people. It should give us the strength to stand up against the Yazid of our times.
That's right.
It should give that strength. But you see that the way that we are behaving and the way that people have become, they don't even have the strength to stand up against the Yazid of the time. What made Yazid Yazid? Because of his nose, his eyes, his lips, his beard, his knees. What made him Yazid? What the qualities that he had, the characteristics he had. And if those characteristics are found in someone, then he's a Yazid. I mean, it's not his name. Right? It's not his birthright. It's not these things. It's the characteristics he had. Someone who disrespected Islam, disrespected the law of Allah, ridiculed the law of Allah, who would sin openly to prove that it's not wrong. And he would say that, for example, you will see that these people who were the rulers of the time, you would say that in his own court he had singers. And he would say that my ears have become najis. Please come and clean them. Okay, they asked him, what is the najasa that made your ears najis? He said, the azan and the ayat of the Quran have made my ears najis. You see, And he wanted singers to come and sing. See? And hence, that attitude that makes a person disrespect Islam, disrespect the Prophet, disrespect the law of Allah, ridicule it, that person is Yazid. Whenever, in whatever time you see him, you will see that you need to oppose that Yazid. You need to oppose that Yazid. And on the other hand, we are saying that, Hussein, we are willing to stand with you. Hussein, we are willing to stand with you. We are ready, our children are ready, my wife is ready, my kids are ready, everyone is ready. And we say it every year and every time. And we are all good Shias and this and that, we say it all the time. But who are we saying this to? We are saying this to Imam Hussein, who made his stand long time ago. Who made his stand, and we know that he's not going to stand up again. So we are saying we are ready to stand with you. We are ready to stand with you. And you know he's not going to stand. He made his stand. He began the jihad and he left. Now you see, we are saying we are willing to make a stand. But then Imam Hussein said, listen, you need to see who the Hussein of your time is. How do you know the Hussein of the time? He said, what did Imam Hussein do? Was Imam Hussein Imam Hussein because of his, features? Because he had arms like that, or legs like this, or a nose like that, or eyes like this. And if you see that person, that's Imam Hussein. What made Imam Hussein Imam Hussein? See, again, his characteristics, his stand. The one who's willing to defend Islam. The one who raises the flag of Islam. The one who's willing to fight battle. The one who's willing to sacrifice himself and his children for the cause of Allah. This is the Hussein of your time. So when you see the Hussein of your time, what should you do? Just like you're reading in Ziyarat-e-Waris-e-Ayn, every ziyarat that you read for Imam Hussein, your job is to support that Hussein. Your job is to cite that Hussein. My friends, this Azadari, this morning is a movement that is alive. That is alive and it's living. And we need to see that. So now what happens, the problem is that in those days, Yazid used to be the king, Hussein was the oppressed. So it was easier then. Now it's a little bit difficult. Because the problem is that both Hussein and Yazid are wearing imamas now. See, when both of them come in the same shape, it's hard to know. If one was a king, you can understand, hey, listen, you're a king, go up. But you see, both of them, Haq and Batil, both of them are showing their faces in such a way that they look Islamic. Now in this confusion, people are confused, where do we stand? Who do we side with? He's an alim also, he's an alim also. Who do we believe in? Who do we side with? What should we do? And you know what? Batil, they have some good slogans also. And I want you to understand this very well. Batil, you'll see, has some really nice slogans that are very attractive. They say that no matter what you're doing, this is one of their slogans, no matter what you're doing, you have to be sincere. This is a slogan of Batil. Be sincere in what you're doing. Sincerity is important. And they know that hey, if we say this, then obviously sincerity is something that's hidden. No one will know if you're sincere or not. So you will never have the chance to judge if you're good and bad. You will never have the chance to see if you're haq and batil. This is a deception. It's a deception that when you say that, yes, this is something that, hey, you know what? We have to be good in our hearts. What? Good in our hearts? What does that mean? What does that mean? What is the meaning of that? When you say sincere, sincere for whom? Right? For example, I love my country. I am sincerely loving my country. That's also sincerity. You can't say he's sincere. He sincerely died for America. He shed his blood for that. That's it. And he was sincerely in love with that. He's sincere. Sincere. The first thing we need to decide, when you're sincere, sincere for whom? Because if you're sincere to shaitan, Allah hates you. If you're sincere to Allah, then shaitan should hate you. You see? Shaitan should hate you. So the only way to know that if you're sincere to Allah is to see if shaitan hates you. If shaitan hates you, it means that you're sincere. If shaitan despises you, then you know that you're sincere. If shaitan is against you, then you know that you're sincere. But if shaitan's media is putting you up and saying you are a great alim and you are a great leader, then you know what? You are not sincere to Allah, you are sincere to shaitan because he has to praise you for it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa that's how you know you're sincere. Sincerity is known by the reaction you get. If you're sincere to Allah, you will see that the shaitan is going to hate you for it. He hates you for it. He despises you for it. Right? And he is going to, you know, do whatever he can to put you down. This is how you know who's on the haq and who's sincere. Right, you cannot know who's sincere, you know, just, you know, hey, you know what, I don't know if he's sincere or not. I don't know if you're sincere or not, brother. I don't know if Allah, I mean, if you're sincere to Allah or not. I have a doubt. That doubt will be removed when I see shaitan's reaction to you. If shaitan and the naib of shaitans, you know, the naibin of shaitan, because he also has representatives, right? And his representatives, they come with, you know, escort and what do you call that? All the entourage. They come with their entourage. Right? You know, they come with their, you know, that drama that they have. Because they're big time. They're not small naibin. The naibin of the imam, they're humble. You know, they're humble. They're living in, you know, small houses and this and that. They have no, for example, offices, you know, like secretaries and this and that, you know, who are walking around with them and entourage. These are people who are humble. And these people, they come strong. So when they come strong, you just need to know how much they like you. Right? How much they like you. You know, this one student, he was in the house, you know, and he was learning, and he said that, you know, he had a dream about shaitan. And he went to tell his teacher about the dream. He said that, you know, I had a dream. So the teacher said, what's your dream? He said, you know, in my dream I saw that shaitan came. Really? You know, no. One thing, why did he come in your dream first? But that's beside it. What did he say? He says, I hate your teacher. I hate your teacher. So I asked him why. He said, because every time I plot something and I make a plan, he always does something to destroy my plan. He always does something to destroy my plan. I hate him. And he was like really angry and upset at this and that. And this student was okay, but what about me? He patted him on the back and said, you're good. You know, the issue is that this is just an example I'm giving you to know that, listen, you know, really, We are looking at the Hussein of our time, we are looking at the Yazid of our time. Are we supporting? If we support the Hussein of our time, then we support Imam Hussein. If we don't even know the Hussein of our time, then you know what? We are those people who don't even know what's going on. They don't care if Hussein was alive or dead. Really, if you love Imam Hussein, if you support Imam Hussein, if you want to be with Imam Hussein, then your job is just to know who the Hussein of your time is, who's holding the flag of Islam in your time, who is shaitan against in your time, then just support that flag that you know is shaitan, that's who's against that flag, so you know that that flag's on the truth. If you know that flag's on the truth, then support that flag and make it respectable. Give your support to it any way you can. My friend, understand this. This is how you know who the truth is, you know, where it is. You see the flag that is rising for the truth, and you see shaitan is against it. That's how you know. Why do we need Ziyarat-e Warisah for? Otherwise, it's a ritual for dead people. You know, yes, we hate Yazid, we hate Ibn Ziyad, we hate all these things. But those who have their characters today, we love them. Those who make their stand today, we love them. You know, if they invite us to come, you know, we'll go in the best dress that we have. Right? And if Allah invites you to His house, you will come in your pajamas. This is the situation. And this is what happens. When you are invited as a guest somewhere, then you obviously go in the best dress that you have. And you're invited to come to Allah's house, then you go in the whatever mediocre dress you have. But you know, Allah said and made it clear, and He didn't want you to wear your expensive clothes when He invites you. He says that, you know, you have clothes, but the best clothes you can wear are the clothes of taqwa and piety. So when you come to my house, you come in the best clothes. And that clothes that you're wearing are taqwa and piety. That's how you come. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
And hence, my friends, here we see that fitna, when it's a lot, when you see the fitna that we are going to face, and the trials that we are facing, we have to be very clear of how Ahlul Bayt have taught us to deal with this fitna. How they taught us to see through it. There are many things I want to explain, but because of the lack of time, you know, I don't have the time right now. Inshallah, some other time we will raise this subject again. Right? To let us know. And how Rasulullah had taught the ways in which we are able to go through this fitna in the hadith of Mi'raj. Right? And how we have been told to get ready with 25 things to make allegiance to the Imam. And if we don't have those 25 things, then we cannot be in the army of the Imam. You know? So these are things, you know, that inshallah some other time when we have more time, we will handle those things. But we need to know at the end that in this state that we are going to be confused, we need to know who the right leader is. And who's the one right leader? And if you don't know it because everyone is saying you have to be sincere, then you judge sincerity by seeing that who is the most hated by those who are the enemies of Islam, those who represent shaitan. See who's the most hated. And then you will understand who is on the haq. Right? Because there will be many flags who will be saying, oh, we are haq also, we are haq and doing all these things. But no, you don't know that. Right? Because sincerity, again, everyone says, we are all sincere. Yeah, sure, it's a claim. It's again a claim. Yeah. Sincerity is only a claim unless and until you show it by the reaction of shaitan and by reaction of the Yazid of your time. This is how you know who's sincere. And the other way to remove sincerity or to increase sincerity in our hearts, to remove nifaq from our hearts, really, is the love of Ali. If you love Ali, then the Messenger had said that the love of Ali removes hypocrisy from the heart, just like fire burns wood, or some example I cannot remember right now. But this is the secret of how to remove hypocrisy from the heart. Is the love of Ali, the love of Ahlul Bayt. And when you love someone, then obviously you express that love to him. You express that love in your actions, in your deeds, in your sayings. The least you can do to the person you love is to be happy in the time he's happy, and to be sad at the time he's sad. To celebrate when he celebrates, and to grieve when your beloved grieves. And now you see that our beloved in this time, and the goal of our love, is the Imam of our time. Is the Imam of our time. And if you see him grieving at this moment, then your job is to grieve with him. See the reason why he's grieving, and you grieve with him. My friends, after Ashura, the grieving of Imam increases. His grieving, his mourning increases. You know, and the intensity of the hardships of Ahlul Bayt also increases. Ashura was a day in which all the tragedies happened. They occurred on this day. And it was sad that they occurred on this day. Zainab was a witness to that. The children, they lived through that. Umm Kulsum lived through that. The wives of Imam Hussein lived through those tragedies. They saw their children die. What they saw in one day, really, is scene after scene of extreme and intense pain. You know, if one child dies, you see a mother, a family is bereaved intensely by the death of one child, let alone all the children in the house, and one by one. And not by accident, but by choice, for the cause of Allah, for the love of Allah, they went and died. You see, when Imam Hussein died, really, everyone who was there knew that after Imam Hussein, everything is going to change. Because until Imam Hussein was alive, you see, the ladies were in the house, they were secure, they had their clothes. You know, they had their clothes. But when Imam Hussein was killed, the first thing that the army did, some people who were around Hussein, they came towards Hussein, as is the way of Jahiliyyah, way of ignorance. They would take whatever they can which is valuable on the body of Hussein. Some people came. The one person came and he chopped off the fingers of Hussein to get his rings. Some people came to take his clothes. and they ripped the clothes off his body. Now, when everything was gone from Imam Hussein's body, now they didn't leave it like that. Now, knowing that he is dead and no one is going to help him and he's helpless, and they want to make their own name in front of Yazid when the news gets to Yazid as to who did what to Hussein. So everyone wanted to do something to Hussein that was unique. So someone came and cut the nose of Hussein. Someone came and cut the ears of Hussein. People disfigured his body, they disfigured his face. Imam Hussein lay there on the ground of Karbala, being ravaged by animals and beasts. And he lay there in the land amongst the people who followed his grandfather. It wasn't the kuffar who are taking this. It wasn't people who were non-Muslims who were taking this. These were the same people who had to recite their Asr prayer that afternoon. Imam Hussein's body was disfigured. And then when they were finished with Hussein, then a shout came out and they said, "Let's raid the tents of Ali and Fatima. Let's raid the tents of Ali and Fatima." And the people started running towards the tents of Hussein. Fizza told everyone that the people are headed towards the tents. Now the women and children, frightened and scared as to what are they going to do with us, they came to the tents and came inside the tents and started taking what they can from the tents. One after another, they started taking things from the tents. And everything, you see, from one tent to the other, people would go in all the tents and whatever they could find, they would take. People who came late and didn't find anything, so they turned towards the woman and they saw what the woman were wearing and what the woman had on them. And they started to strip them of whatever they had. They started to strip them for whatever they have. If they had anything on their head, they would take it from them. Their veils were taken away. Everything that they had of possessions were taken away. Zainab and Umm Kulsoom had the belongings of Fatima and Ali. Oh, this is one of those things that when Imam Sajjad was released from jail by Yazid, he asked Yazid for. He said, "Bring me back the belongings of my father Ali and Fatima. The memories of their father, the memories of Rasulullah were all there. They're not precious, but they were just his clothes. Maybe his little things that they used to remember Rasulullah by, but they used to remember Ali and Fatima by. These things were taken from their places. And they're now, their tents were barren of possessions. Now the ladies are huddled in the tent as to see what they're going to do next. Now you see, a call came again, and one call was made saying, "Burn the tents of Hussein. Burn the tents of Hussein." So now the tents were being put on fire. When one tent was on fire and the ladies are in the tent, they would run to the other tent and hide themselves there. Then they would go to the next tent and then the next tent. Where can they go? Finally, they came to the tent of Imam Sajjad, who was unconscious and lying in his bed. Zainab woke up Imam Sajjad and said, "My son, tell us what to do. You are the Imam of the time. You are the Imam of the time. Should we stay inside and die by fire, or should we go out without our veils on our heads? What should we do?" Imam Sajjad's imamat begins with this ruling, my brothers. Imam Sajjad began his imamah with this ruling, and he said, it's wajib to save our lives. Go out of the tents. All the ladies ran out of the tents. All the ladies ran out of the tents as the tent of Imam Sajjad was put on fire. When the tent was put on fire, Hamid ibn Muslim says, I saw a woman go inside a burning tent, come out of it, go inside again, and come out of it. I was wondering why she is doing that. Why is she going in a burning tent? What was wrong with her? When I went near, I saw her taking out a young man on her back. Zainab is 55 years old. She is carrying Imam Sajjad on her back. Our salam to Zainab. Allah sends a salam to you who have saved his imamah from the burning tent. When they came out, now everyone is out on the ground now. Everyone is out on the ground. There's mayhem all over, this chaos and anarchy. People are running around and trying to see what they can find of any loot that they can find, anything that they can find of any precious, then they want to get it from them. When they raid everywhere, they couldn't find anything, and they were looking at, now they were looking at the children. One person came, Hamid ibn Muslim says, I saw that one person, he came up to a little girl. He came up to a little girl and he told her, give me those earrings on your ears. The girl was terrified and she was looking up at him, her eyes wide open. She looked up at him. Sakina is over a little bit over four to five years old. She's just a little girl and she's just been orphaned. She has seen her whole house die that whole day. Now this person comes to her and says, give me those earrings. Sakina starts to take them off, but he doesn't wait for it. He loses his patience and says, let me take them. He grabs the earrings and pulls them off the ears. And the ears split open. And now the blood gushes out from her ears. And she shrieks out in pain as the blood now drenches her dress. Oh my friends, now the tents are burned. Now everything is removed from Ahlul Bayt. They have lost every position they have. Now Zainab and Umm Kulsum see that the army goes back to their camp. And now they are just having their celebration and merrymaking. The noise is heard in the ground. The lights are on. And you see that the house of the Prophet that has been ransacked and ravaged by the beasts that has been ravaged. Now the children. Now Zainab ibn Umm Kulsum, they gather the children together. They gather all the little children together to see where they are. And they put everyone together and all the ladies together. And they now organize everyone and make them sit in a huddle. Now they look around to take a head count. And as they were doing that, you see, as they were taking the head count, now a time came when they looked around and said, Zainab asked Umm Kulsum, did you see Sakina? Then she's not here. Then they say, we need to look for her. Hussein left her with me as an amanat. As a trust, Hussein left her with me. Let us go out and look for it. It's dark. Now where are they going to look? They'll go around looking for Sakina. They're calling out to Sakina. And they're saying, Sakina, where are you, Sakina? Call out to us. They come to a body. They come to a body. And they see that a spear is inside the body. You see, all the heads have been beheaded. All the bodies have been beheaded. There's no head on the bodies now. They look at the body and they see a spear in the chest. They recognize this is the body of Akbar. They went forward, and now they see someone else's body. They see this is the body of Qasim and Aun Muhammad. They recognize the bodies of different martyrs, but Sakina is not there. They reach a body that doesn't have arms. They know that this is the body of Abbas, and Sakina is not there. Now they come forward, and they see a strange body, a body that has been mutilated in such a way and disfigured in such a way that it couldn't be recognized. It couldn't be recognized in any way. It has so many injuries on it. It has so many cuts and holes on it that you cannot even know whose body it was. And when they reached that body, they saw Sakina on top of the body saying, "Father, why have you left me, Father? Why have you left me?"
No shame.